first joined the company in around 2001, I was actually working in the field at a DC. And at the time, the big competition was .NET versus Java. And one of the things we as a field did was represented local companies. What was interesting about the time there was, I had originally worked at IBM, so I had experience with Java. We were trying to compete with them, and I really thought we had the better technology. So the challenge was to tell customers, it was like, take the Pepsi challenge. Try our stuff. We'll give you our tools for free. We'll give you, you know, your developers free training. Just try our stuff. If you don't like it, you know, we'll go away. And more often than not, people loved our technology. So it was a really exciting time to just kind of be doing the head-to-head battles, to have like this clear, you know, either technology that you were competing against. And it was a pretty exciting time in the industry. You know, I think one of the big things in the turning point in the war, shall we say, was, I believe it was PDC 2001. At the time, all these different Java vendors, IBM and so forth, were building what were reference applications. And what it was an e-commerce store for selling, it was pet shop or pet store, where, you know, you could have product listings, there's a shopping cart, you could check out of the shopping cart, etc. This is how you should design Java applications. Well, we said, okay, well, what if we use our technology and build the exact same application, exact same features, shopping cart, product features, checkout, everything, but we'll do it on .NET. And we unveiled that at PDC 2001 in the keynote, and this is, you know, one of those crazy things where did the exact same application 2,700% faster, and I think it was a third or a fifth of the code. So, you know, if you're a customer and you can do the exact same thing, it's going to be 2,700% faster and much less code, which means less errors, less debugging, less people needed to write that code. It's a no-brainer to choose .NET over Java, and that was like one of the big things where customers really started saying, like, wow, there are no reasons, you know, outside of religious reasons, to not choose .NET over Java. Sometimes technology choices are religious. So we'd go talk to customers, and there'd be some people that in the meeting, imagine a meeting room with 10 people, you know, three people are checking email, there's five people that are neutral, and then a couple of people that absolutely hate Microsoft. They are ABM, anything but Microsoft. And you would be, it would be like Neo. They would shoot bullets at you. It says, well, does your software, you know, include this ability to lock database rows? And, you know, they'd fire the gun and say, yes, you know, it's coming in the next version, or, you know, we're doing this feature, or here's why you don't want to use that feature. And it would, they would try and find excuses not to use our technology because they were anything but Microsoft. There are some cases where I came in and I felt like I was an evangelist, like, you know, I used to work at IBM and I saw how bad, you know, our technology was and how much better it could be. I saw the light and just give it a chance. There were a couple times with a genetics company that I came in and, you know, years later, it turns out they had switched everything to .NET. I thought they just didn't care at all in the presentation. And I think it was the first time they were having their eyes opened, if you will, to the possibilities of our technology. But I do remember, you know, there's a lot of people that were, you know, trying to do FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. There's Scott McNeely from Sun had some great quotes where he was calling .NET not yet. And the press absolutely loved it because, oh, okay, we have, you know, these two rival companies and this guy that's not afraid to just trash, you know, their competitors. I don't think there was really a worry from what's technically right, but sometimes the right technical solution or the better technical solution doesn't get adopted. And, you know, you see that in the history of technology. When you look at the 2003 release and really sort of historically in Visual Studio, we had started to cover some parts of different disciplines within application development. So, you know, there's some people that are dedicated, I just test applications. There's some people that are going to architect applications, like build the blueprints for how to build a house. They do it for applications. But we didn't really have the right tools for them. We weren't really hitting enterprise scenarios where you have these specialized people in these different roles. And that's on the enterprise side. On the low-end side, like, we had started, because we were so focused on the .NET versus Java, it was all about winning developers as opposed to seeing, you know, one of the core things that made us successful early on was being like the easiest tools to build an application for Windows. You know, Visual Basic 6, you could learn it in 3 hours and build something. And what we decided to do with 2005 was really expand both on the low end with Visual Studio Express and on the high end with Visual Studio Team System. So it's like we are going to build a set of products for the enterprise that, you know, you have dedicated testers. Here's a product for you that understands their discipline, understands the things they do day to day. Same thing with architects, same thing with enterprise developers. We know that, you know, an application isn't built by one person. We're going to do things to enable you to collaborate with Team Foundation Server, where, you know, these people are going to be able to, if I finish my feature, it sends an email to the tester. The tester finishes his test. Everybody gets to see how it's going in the progress and chained, and almost like a workflow, if you will, for how the product's going. The project manager gets this summary view and says, oh, wow, you know, the tester's finished and the developer's finished, and I now have this progress reporting. That stuff wasn't built. It was a really big expansion for our product. And Visual Studio Express as well for the low end, and there was a lot of changes there. Well, Visual Studio Express really is a family name for a set of products. So it's VB, C#, VWD, and J# for a little bit, because we actually had a Java product for our customers that had committed to Java at the time, and C++. So what was different there is we wanted to build a set of products that were for beginners, hobbyists, and students, and really enable, lower the friction for people to learn Visual Studio. An analogy maybe that we used to use was pilots. When they're first learning to fly, they learn on a tiny Cessna, right? And then, you know, once you understand how to fly, then you move up to, say, the 747, which is, you know, Visual Studio Team System. Unfortunately, what we were doing is saying, throwing everybody in the cockpit of a 747, saying, well, I hope you can figure this out. And, you know, there's 100 options on this menu. And really with Visual Studio Express, like the big thing we wanted to do was ship simplicity as a feature. So instead of having 10 options to build, there's one option to build. Instead of having, you know, 4 different ways to access data, there's one way to access data. And really simplifying the experience. And even things like getting the product. Like we really had to rewrite the rules for the way we did Visual Studio. Traditionally, we would sell in like CompUSA or Best Buy. That's how we sold our products, or through our value-added resellers for the enterprise. But for the low end, or the person, you know, that is the one-person developer building websites in their spare time, what we said is, what if we use the internet to download a Visual Studio product? Which, if you start thinking about that and start thinking about simplicity as the key, and Prashant and Tom Button had really built sort of the high-level guidelines, and we were really thinking about what ways we can take advantage of them in terms of the download scenario, but we had to go from 4 gigabyte product, which could take you, you know, hours if not days to download depending on your connection, to a 40 megabyte product. So a huge engineering where it's like, do we need this feature? Can we cut this feature? Can you do the application scenario? What is the minimum things you need Visual Studio to work to enable these scenarios? And it was a huge engineering feat. A guy named Luke Hoban, who would literally just go through every single DLL and try and do things to refactor and re-engineer them. Because Visual Studio was never built for that. So there was a number of things where it's like, wow, if we take this out, does that take a dependency on that, which means these 3 things fail? And there were a number of things just in terms of engineering to say, wow, we're going to enable this product to be downloaded. Another thing we wanted to do is, even just on the download scenario, was Internet Explorer had done this, which was, rather than have you download all of the product, we're going to build a bootstrapper that's going to sniff your machine and say, wow, you already have the .NET framework installed and you already have SQL Server installed, so you don't have to download those parts. We detected that you have those. You only need to download this part. And what it did was lower the total download size, you know, to if you already have the .NET framework installed, then the IDE was 30 megabytes, which was like our favorite scenario or our ideal scenario. 30 megabytes is a great thing to download from 4 gigabytes. But the bootstrapper and all the engineering that had to go to actually build that was a lot of lessons learned, for lack of a better word, because it's not something Visual Studio had done, and we weren't really looking at those setup scenarios. Understanding the bootstrapper technology has really helped us in the future with something that we've released now, Web web platform installer, which automatically installs not only Visual Studio, specifically Visual Web Developer Express, but also applications. So if I want to have a website spun up and I want a developer tool, a database, and a couple applications, you know, my personal blog, it does that automatically for you. And it's that tool that became sort of the component to do that. A lot of times people are like, why are we doing this? And why do we understand? And I think if you look at why we became successful, it was because we democratized development. And what that meant was you don't have to be a developer to build an application. We built a bunch of training that'll show you how to build applications. Here's a free tool. Here's everything you need to build your website, your club website, your Windows application, your desktop utility. How do we democratize development and enable both the training and everything to be free? We don't want to lose developers to price. Like, you wouldn't want, you know, well, we could have had huge adoption, but really we decided to charge a certain price, and therefore we're going to eliminate this entire class of developers from our platform. We went after the low-end developer because there was a lot of things we were trying to do. One is obviously to grow the base of Visual Studio developers and really grow the base of professional developers. If you look at the academic segment, enrollment in computer science is at 3 or 4% across all majors. Tiny percentage. In fact, schools are canceling, closing their computer science programs because the number one challenge, and you'll hear Bill Gates say the number one challenge is we don't have enough professionals in our industry to support the growth that we're having. So there's clearly a need both in terms of feeding the industry as well as self-serving. And the next killer Windows application can be built by, Sean Fanning, who built Napster on Windows and, had 100 million downloads. That application should be on our platform. We want to democratize development, make it easy for anyone to be able to build an application in a couple hours. And that's really what our goal was. How do we make it easy to download, get the product, build the application that you're looking to build? Making Visual Studio Express free was probably one of the biggest challenges I've had in my career at Microsoft. I've been here for 8 years, and it was absolutely the biggest uphill battle. To this day, I don't know how we did it. And we had a lot of supporters. Scott Guthrie, went to the mat to try and make it free. And there was just a lot of things where people knew it was the right thing to do, but it was changing. You're literally changing a decision that Bill Gates wrote in an open letter to hobbyists in the 70s, saying, you can't use our free product because it'll, destroy the commercial market, et cetera. So back to how we actually did it. The first thing I thought was, I was a naive product manager at the time. I thought, logic and reason, that's how we'll win this war. I had 300 slides of data on everything from user segmentation to developer to another tool that had existed before called Web Matrix, where we asked, and there was a large percentage of PHP developers, the number one reason they even tried the product was because it was free. So we saw there was it's elasticity of demand, where you so much as charge a dollar and you'll get tiny, much lower adoption in terms of the product. So we said our competitors are doing free products, but they're not targeting this segment. They're saying, professional developer tools are a commodity. That's not what we're saying. We're saying there's a class of development that we can simplify, beginners, students, and hobbyists that have these scenarios, and those are the ones that we can build a great tool for. We're not going to cannibalize, Visual Studio Professional. And that's really one of the biggest successes that happened, is we made one product free, and we made another product at an even higher price with Team System, which is around $10,000 for a subscription, and our revenues grew. So really showed sort of the strategy and the bet that happened. But so we're fighting and going into RTM. And RTM is really releasing to the web. And what we're going to do. Now, previous to this, we had said that the product was going to be, in the tens of dollars or something like that was our official line. But the whole time, everybody's fighting for it to be free. Me, Scott Wiltemuth, and our legal counsel are on the phone the night before the product's going to ship. And they are giving us the right things to say because we wanted to make sure basically the decision was, can we defer the decision? Because, wow, this date is right upon us and people are still a little scared to make the decision. So it was, what things can we do to make sure that we can still make it free at some point and still retain the option to charge for it at a later time? And it was scary to get, you know, the exact legal wording to make sure that everybody was fine. And we made it, I think it was free for 1 year. Download it, burn it, do whatever you want, put it on BitTorrent. We don't care. Steal it for 1 year and do so now. And that gave us 1 year to figure out to really try and actually make it free, which was another battle. Within 2 days of Beta 1 releasing, we had over 200,000 downloads of their product. 200,000 downloads is huge. Over time, I think we had in 2005, 17 million downloads of Visual Studio Express. I have yet to find a developer tool that has been downloaded more times than Visual Studio Express. It's just become a huge success. Anybody that's doing, you know, basic HTML editing would use it. It's a free tool, you know, and people love the product, which was the other thing that we saw. With those numbers, we said there's great adoption. You don't want to stop that. People are buying our product. You don't want to stop that. And we looked at, we had done a developer survey. We had gotten Comscore and Media Metrics to survey registered customers because you had to register the product to use it after 30 days. And the really telling number was, I think it was about 2/3 of customers had never used a Visual Studio developer tool ever. And what that told us was, we're not cannibalizing the pros. These are people that don't consider themselves developers. You know, this is somebody that has, you know, is running their kids' soccer league and just wants to be able to publish their schedule and photos. Like, those are the sort of scenarios we wanted to enable. And now we had the actual data. And at that point, Soma was like, yeah, this is something we do. And Soma's the one that signed off. And, you know, we hug them all the time for that because I think customers really appreciate a Visual Studio Express. So Visual Studio 2005 Beta 2 if making Express free was the hardest thing I've done, Beta 2 was the scariest thing I've done, which was, at the time, Eric Rutter ran the division, and Eric is somebody, you know, you better be buttoned up when you talk to Eric. That is the best way that I can say it. He really knows his stuff. He had been Bill Gates' technical assistant, incredibly technical, incredibly great business smarts. And one of the things we noticed, me, Brian Keller, and Brian Goldfarb had been trying to install Beta 2, which we were going to release to the web. If you remember, Beta 1 had 200,000 downloads in just a couple days. We know there's going to be a huge number of customers that are going to download Beta 2 as well. So we got to make sure that everything is buttoned up. So we go to install Beta 2, and it does not install. It's giving us what are package load failures. And this is the day before the product is supposed to go on the web. It's a Friday. And we tried to resolve those that night, and we ended up doing this roll-up and seeing there's a bunch of cross-dependencies, this thing called SQL Native Access Client. Snack wasn't uninstalling. Our uninstall didn't work. In fact, if you followed the uninstall, it would actually destroy your machine, and you had to, like, re-image your machine. There was just terrible things with our installer. And because we were putting it on the web, you have 250,000 customers in a couple days that can't install the product. It's going to be an absolute nightmare. I had the job of having to go at the ship party for Beta 2, go up to Eric Rutter and tell him, we need to hold Beta 2 at least until Monday because we don't know what's going on with the uninstaller. And that was very scary to do. He didn't want to say anything at the party, and we would just, like, quietly do it on Monday. And mind you, I'm on the phone with the guy on the website because all the web pages are built. And I'm like, just hold. We're not going to release today. And it was just incredibly scary in terms of responsibility and ownership that you could take for the product. That's something I don't think people realize. Like, I was a lonely peon, and so were, you know, the two Bryans, and we literally stopped a product from shipping to the web because there was a ship stopper bug. And what we did wasn't, you know, build a new version of it. We decided to document it and say, this is exactly what what you need to do, otherwise your machine will be hosed. And it was like, how big can we make the red block lettering when you go to uninstall? And there was, I think the other part is people got so emotionally interested in making sure Express was successful. There was a guy named Aaron Stebner who was on the setup team. And the setup team, you know, we had asked them to do a bootstrapper, and it was the first time we had released to the web where they were doing all this dynamic stuff, and just a huge, much larger number of customers using our product ever. So they just had a ton of features. Aaron Stebner had built this tool that would automatically, and this is like in his spare time, he actually ended up switching jobs, and he still built the tool to automatically uninstall beta 1. Because the product, or now I think it can still be used, parts of it are still being used to uninstall any version of Visual Studio. And he did it because all these people were using it. It's one of those like unsung heroes where this guy, like, you know, over the weekend decides to build this thing so that people don't have to follow 16 sequential steps, which if you do in the incorrect order means you have to completely reinstall your operating system. And those are some of the things where you're like, man, you know, we really put our hearts into our product. At the time, while I was kind of the unofficial Visual Studio Express product manager, I was by title, I was the C# product manager at the time. And the way the C# team did is use a lot of the ways Microsoft products are designed, which is we have what's called a strategic design review, an SDR. We send in, imagine like 20 of your best customers, and these are, you know, people from financial companies, you know, Fortune 100 companies, to you know, the top consultants. Bring them in, and Anders would talk about the new features coming into C#, or somebody else would talk about the new features coming in the debugger for the next product. And we'd have that, and that's how we made decisions. We'd ask them at the end, now we've shown you all these features, here's 100 feature dollars. Which of these are the most important? And let's say there's this one feature you absolutely love, you'd bet $100 on that feature and you don't care about anything else. So we took that feedback and, mind you, these are the smartest of the smart guys. So the features that they were leaning towards were language features, and some got deprioritized, meaning they didn't really put that many feature dollars in. One was a feature called Edit and Continue. And what was interesting was when we first showed the C# IDE, it was Scott Wiltemuth, who was also one of the co-creators of the C# language, along with Peter Gold. He's showing C# 2005 for the first time. And in the Q&A, he's saying how we had chosen C# to have refactoring, Visual Basic was going to have Edit and Continue. And somebody comes up and said, you made the wrong choice. And it was kind of crazy to hear that sort of adamant feedback on this feature. And what's also interesting at the time, 2004 is when blogs started getting interesting and everybody started talking about blogging. And the Visual Studios team started saying, how can we incorporate customer feedback and do this in an open and transparent way? We started this thing called Ladybug. And what it was giving people a direct voice into filing feature requests or filing bugs against the product. And you can actually vote things up, like what is your biggest feature request that you want fixed or maybe do workarounds. And it was adding a social dimension for our customers to help build our product. What was surprising there was, while the top of our top customers said refactoring is the most important feature, when we actually saw the feedback in Ladybug, Edit and Continue was the number one requested feature. It really sort of opened our eyes for, well, we need to make sure that we're getting the right cross segment of customers. What was surprising was the team was like, I think we can do it. And Scott Wiltemuth and a bunch of people on the C# debugger team and language team, because Edit and Continue, what it allows you to do is, imagine your application's running. You can stop the application and while it's running, actually change the application. So what that means is you need to make language features, you need to do IDE features, and even platform features. The platform features were already built in to some extent because Visual Basic was doing it. Huge number of work, and it's like, can we actually do this for Visual Studio 2005? When a product starts closing down, they stop adding features and start working on stability and performance. Scott and a number of people that were the champion of this saying, this is the number one feature people are asking for, number one feature. I mean, it's just like running in front of a train saying, we got to add this feature, we got to add this feature. And I mean, they worked their butts off to get that feature into the product and shipping in Visual Studio 2005. People don't realize just how late that work started and how Herculean it was across all the teams to make it started, and it was because the community had voted for it. And it was one of those things where people absolutely appreciated it. Soma had a blog post on saying how we're going to incorporate Ed and Continue, and at the time it was the number one blog post Soma had done. There was over 100 comments saying, we love you guys, you guys are the best. And it was just sort of like heartwarming, you know, giving the community a hug, if you will. But there's just so much effort and passion that goes into that. So the origins of the name C-sharp are kind of interesting, because originally it was Anders wanted to have a productive version of C++ and certainly things like influencing in Java design, etc. But when they started building it, it was actually named Cool. And it was kind of interesting because even in some of the first releases, they changed the name before they ever announced it, and that was at PDC, but they changed the libraries. Developers started digging in and seeing all these references to Cool, and it was, you know, the developers had still left like references to Cool all over the place, and curious developers started seeing it there. What was interesting is sort of Anders' perspective on it, which was, if you have to choose a product name, don't make it self-congratulatory. You know, choose a product name that is either descriptive or gets the stuff and gets people interested. And having a version of C, it's very clear that it's from the family of C programming languages. And C-sharp sort of, you know, is, you know, C-sharp singing, if you will. So it was kind of interesting. And, you know, there's always challenges with choosing a product name. I think one of the other ones we had was Link. And we were sitting around a room with the C-sharp folks. It was Scott Wiltemuth, Doug Amaral, Anders, and me, and we're thinking about what we're going to name Language Integrated Query, and we started thinking of all these different names, you know, Project Infinity, but no, Visual Studio's Infinity, and we actually chose, at the time, before we released, Project Clarity as the code name for that. And if you were doing data programming with data, it was going to be called D-Clarity and X-Clarity if it was XML. We ended up killing that, and we built, like, you know, logos. The decision was actually based to call it Language Integrated Query, which is a way to access data and XML objects or in relational databases, be able to query those with one familiar syntax. The reason we chose, rather than having sort of like a cool nickname, Project Clarity, was we had seen a lot of teams build equity in a name, like Indigo, or and end up changing it to something very descriptive, like Indigo, cool name, became Windows Communication Foundation. Like, they chose a very descriptive name. And we wanted to, rather than having people fall in love with, you know, XYZ name, let's choose the right name first, so when we talk about it, we're always talking about the same name. So it really, Language Integrated Query Link was a good one in that it sort of incorporated everything that we wanted and rolled off the tongue. But that those are some of the things that we have in sort of the inside story of how code names start within Microsoft. Cool, yeah, so we removed Cool. I think you can probably not find any references to Cool in the product, and, you know, once we hit version 1, but there was a bunch of people that, developers that weren't afraid to look at our source code or decompile our stuff and see references to Cool everywhere. Bill and Paul were originally building BASIC for the Altair. The goal was they didn't even have, you know, a company. They were going to build this BASIC with a hardware they'd never even seen before, and they were going to, you know, do it in punch cards and just hope it worked. It ended up working, and it was, you know, small miracle. But the goal was to enable people to build applications by having a higher level abstraction. And that was the BASIC programming language. Now, that evolved in a number of different versions of BASIC, and people were writing the classic BASIC, I guess, for Apple IIe, for example. You know, it was, you're at a command prompt and you type, you know, you do line numbers 10, you know, print my name, line number 20, go to line number 10, so you'd see your name printed constantly, and, you know, that was the coolest thing people had seen at the time. And it was really about building these console applications or command prompt applications. You could do things like having menus, but there really was nothing graphical. It was really the when you started looking at Windows and the evolution of graphical operating systems. What can we do to build tools that will enable you to build graphical applications? And what it was going from a command line to a visual experience for building an application. Like, imagine being able to, you want a picture in your application, you drag and drop a picture. And that was really the genius behind Visual Basic, which is you're going to build visual applications visually. You're going to be able to see exactly how the application's going to appear. You want a text box and a label, you'll be able to see exactly how they appear. And building that in a rapid application development and democratizing building applications on Windows. Because it was so much easier to build applications, you know, you read a book and it was 2 hours, it was a tiny product. You know, it was a 1 megabyte and had a great, you know, resource file and help SDK. We kind of laugh at just how much they were able to do with such little space. But it just made it easy where anybody could build a simple Windows application. And Windows applications really took off from that perspective. Anybody can build a Windows applications, and we started seeing companies, Visual Basic getting deployed across companies where, hey, we need a departmental application to, you know, track our product inventory or our PC inventory or, you know, the printers we have. So Mr. Grimes was a really well-known C++ developer in the community, and he, you know, wanted to speak his mind on kind of trashing .NET and Microsoft in general. There were a number of points he made that, you know, were valid, but we had design decisions and reasons why we made certain decisions. But there was stuff that was, like, completely wrong. So at the time, everybody was talking about Longhorn, which became Windows Vista. And one of the things he flat out said was Longhorn would not ship with the .NET framework. And it was wrong. It was absolutely wrong. There was plans to put the .NET framework, and, you know, we have history. It ships with the .NET framework 2.0. There's a lot of things where maybe I felt it was my job to sort of show the truth on what people is actually going on with our products and why we're making the decisions we did. I mean, another one was he said, you know, Microsoft isn't using .NET at all. And I thought that was kind of interesting because when you're inside, you realize how much .NET had affected different teams in building certain products. So what we decided to do was I just emailed an internal alias of people that were using C# and asked them, hey, how are you using .NET, and can I mention you as a product that actually ships with .NET? And it was everything from tablet PCs. When you do handwriting recognition, that's .NET. It's Windows Server, that's .NET. It's Media Center, that's .NET. On the server side, SQL Server was being built with it. Visual Studio was being built with it. For some products, we got the actual lines of code where we could actually tell them, and it was in the millions, 6 million lines of code for certain products. And some products hadn't been released, but we couldn't talk about it. But it was like, hey, here's products in every single group that is using .NET. Xbox is looking to enable their community to build games. Guess what? They chose .NET as a way to, with XNA, to build, have their community build games on the Xbox. And it was really sort of a resurgence of this technology is being used everywhere, and people are going to say whatever they want to say, and there can be critiques on why'd you choose this versus that. But I saw just such a huge momentum all across the company on how we were using our technology. You know, the thing about blogs is being open. Microsoft before, we wouldn't even partake in the conversation. The point of community is to be a member of that, participate in that conversation. He responded directly in my comments. I responded back in the comments. It's saying, like, you know, you can say something sucks, something sucks, something sucks. If you don't hear why it doesn't suck or why we made the decision, it sounds like it's completely one-sided. And that's really one of the things that the explosion of blogs has been able to have Microsoft people talk openly and honestly about why they're building their products, how they're building their products, and so forth. And I think there's over 5,000 bloggers at Microsoft or so. So just a huge number of people and teams that are using blogs to be able to communicate or be able to say, listen, this person's saying something completely false. Here's the truth. We're not going to lie to you. Here's the numbers. Here's, you wanted numbers? Here's every product using .NET. here are the lines of code. We're making an investment. And yeah, it's going to ship with the .NET framework. It's fascinating. There's this bizarre dichotomy with developers where we are the most literal and logical creatures on the world, but when we fall in love with something, we will defend it to the end. It is, you know, whether it's the Mac fanboys, the Xbox versus PS2, or programming languages, you know. Even within our own camp, Microsoft builds programming languages in C++, Visual Basic, and C#. We think to be inclusive of all three of those. They're fanboys in between those that hate each other and think, you know, one language sucks. You know, there'll be somebody saying C++ is the bubonic plague. And it's like, you know, the worst thing that's happened to the industry. And there's somebody else saying, you know, Visual Basic's terrible. Or somebody saying, you know, C# should have never been built. Or, you know, all these things. People are just really passionate about what they do. And even though we, you know, people think of us as, you know, almost like Spock in terms of how logical we are, it's the complete opposite. We're just so passionate about the technologies that we have, and we'll defend it, you know, outside of any logic. It's just an emotional, irrational response. And that's why I love it.